We're beginning Megillah Esrus, and by way of introduction, we'll do a very quick overview of the Megillah, and then we'll introduce it and try to move forward with the text. So the Megillah basically revolves around the following story. There's a man named Elimelech, he has a wife named Naomi, they have two children, Mahlon and Chilion. There's a famine in the land of Israel. They leave the land of Israel to live in the land of Moab. Elimelech loses his wealth and dies. His two sons marry Moabite women, Rus and Orpah. And then his two sons die. Now his widowed wife returns to the land of Israel with her two daughter-in-laws, Rus and Orpah. En route, Orpah is encouraged to leave and leaves. Rus, even though she's encouraged to leave, stays on and comes back to the land of Israel with her mother-in-law, Naomi. When they enter the land of Israel, they are impoverished. Although they had been very wealthy when they left Naomi and her husband, now that they re-enter, they have lost all their wealth in Chutz La'aretz. And Rus, together with her mother-in-law, finds a place to live. They don't have food, they don't have what to live off of, and she goes to the fields to try and collect the pieces of grain, the little scraps of grain that the Torah says the poor are entitled to. She happens upon the field of Boaz, who is the Gadol Hador, the great sage of the generation, and unbeknownst to her, Boaz is also a relation of her late husband and the family she married into. Boaz recognizes that she's special, and he signals his staff to always drop kernels next to her, and she ends up coming home with a huge bundle of grain. And her mother-in-law recognizes that someone has recognized her and is doing them a favor. And then the time comes when they're finishing harvesting, they're bringing the food in, and her mother-in-law tells her, tonight Boaz will certainly lie by his piles, go lie next to him. And Rus goes and lies next to him, and he awakens in the middle of the night, and he sees her, and he tells her, wait a second, this isn't the way things are supposed to be. You're right, I do have a responsibility to marry you, because you're the widow of my relation, but there's someone else who's a closer relation to you, and he has first rights to marry you. Tomorrow morning I'm going to see if he does, and if not, I will marry you. And that morning he approaches that relative in front of the court, and he tells him, do you want to redeem the field that was sold by our late relative? And do you want to redeem the girl? You want, take them both. If you don't, then I'm taking them. And the man relinquishes his right. Boaz marries her, and from there comes the Davidic dynasty. Ultimately, she is the great-great-grandmother of King David. So this is the story of a Giyores, a woman by the name of Rus, who began as a Gentile, and according to some understandings, even married when she was still not Jewish, and only later became Jewish, and ultimately she climbed the ladder because of her good traits. She ended up being the mother, the source of King David, the Davidic dynasty, and the Messiah. And we read this Megillah Esrus on Shavuos night, Shavuos morning, sorry, as we will discuss. That's a quick overview. Yeah?
Yeah, you think
right. Verse states Vayikel Mikreha, which literally translated means her happening happened. We will analyze it when we get there, but that's what the verse states. Now let's begin. Let's rewind the clock of time. Let's go back to a time there is no time, there is no world, God has not yet created anything. And there are conceptions. God conceives the name of Messiah, Lifnei Shemesh Yinun Shmo, prior to the creation of the sun, prior to the creation of the world, Yinun, which is going to be the name of the Messiah, is given his name. What is the importance of that name? Why does he have to be named before the Messiah? Certain concepts God says have to precede the world. One of them is the Messiah. Let's leave that question hanging as we approach our Megillah. The world is created, and world becomes immortal, and God destroys the world and leaves a small remnant, Noah and his ark, and they come out. Noah has three children, Shem, Ham, and Yefes. Again, the world is going downhill. 10 generations later, we have a shining light, Abraham, Avram. Avram recognizes his creator, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Avram adopts his nephew after Avram has been willing to give up his life, fighting for his belief of monotheism, when the king Nimrod says, serve my idols, Avram says, no. And Avram's brother Haran says, you know what, let me see if Avram is willing to give up his life. Nimrod is threatening him, I'll throw him into the furnace. If he comes out alive, then I'll do it too. And so Avram says, there is one God, and it's not this idol, and it's not you, and it's not fire, and it's not water, and it's not heaven, and it's not earth, and it's not the sun, and it's not the moon, etc. Until Nimrod says, well, if you won't bow to any idol, I'm throwing you into the furnace. And he throws Avram into the furnace, and God makes a miracle, and Avram walks out unscathed. At which point Haran says, gee, I'm with Avram! And they say, okay. And they throw him into the furnace, and he's burnt there crisp. It doesn't work that way. If one wants to be willing to give up his life, he has to be willing to give up his life. And he leaves behind a son named Lot, and he leaves behind a daughter named Sarah. Avram marries Sarah and adopts Lot and takes him along in his travels. Lot becomes wealthy, and he becomes wealthy because he was traveling with Avram. And then Lot goes off to live by the Sodomites. Lot sees they have incestuous relationships. This is nice. I want to be with them. So Lot leaves Avram. He leaves Avram's faith. But you know what? You spend years traveling with an uncle who's such a pious person, it rubs off. And so, even though Lot marries one of the women of the town and has children in the town and his children marry in the town, Lot is still affected by the years he has spent with Avram. And so, when the angels come to overturn the city of Sodom, they meet Lot in the entrance to the city, and Lot knows that taking in guests is punishable by death in Sodom and Amorah. And nonetheless, Lot tells them, come to my home. And he risks his life, and he brings them in a roundabout way to his home. And during the meal, they need salt, and his wife says, you want salt? Not enough, you're bringing these new customs to our town of taking in guests, you want salt? And she sends word to the neighbor, we need salt because my husband has this craze that we have to take in guests. And we know how the story continues, because she leaked the word, the people of Sodom surround his house, they want to rape the men that are in there, and the angels save Lot, and Lot tries to convince his sons-in-law and daughters, come with me, the city will be overturned by God, and they all say, oh, you're nuts. And finally, the angels tell Lot, it's time to go, and Lot's busy trying to get the last penny in, he's collecting every little cent, until finally the angels say, now, time to overturn the city. They grab his hand, his wife's hand, his two daughters, and they take him out of the city, and they say, move forward, and don't look back. Look back. You are not on a level to look back. Army. And as they're running forward, Lot's wife looks back and she turns into a pillar of salt. She's punished for the salt that she leaked the word for that salt. Lot continues running with his two daughters. The city of Sodom and Amorah is overturned, those five cities. And Lot runs to the hilltops thinking the world is being destroyed. He enters a cave with his two daughters. And the daughters think there's no one left. The world's all destroyed. Going to be? How do we continue the world? How did Adam and Eve do it? Cain and Abel, they married their sisters. They didn't have a choice. We're in the same position. We don't have a choice. But our father won't. Agree? So, the older one tells the younger one, look, I'll tell you how you bring children to the world. He teaches them the facts of life. And God makes a miracle. They find wine in that cave, special wine, special grapes. They make wine, and they give it to Lot to drink, and he becomes drunk. Yeah. Yeah, definitely says something for Lot.
It
wasn't that bad. Look, why was Lot spared? He was spared because he was Avram's nephew, so Avram wouldn't be hurt. But he was also spared because of the merit that he did, Achnasat Ochim. He was kind. He took in these people, not knowing they were angels. And now, the first night, the elder one goes, and then the second night, Lot realizes something happened, and nonetheless, he allows himself to get drunk. And the second daughter goes, and they have two children. Ammon and Moab. Now, why does God cause a miracle that they'll have grapes ready for wine in the back of the cave so that they could have a relationship that is punishable by death, that one should rather get killed than have this relationship with their father? What's going on here? Let's move forward. Jump forward 400 years. The Jews leave Egypt, and they're traveling 40 years in the desert, and it's time to enter the land of Israel. And Ammonites and Moabites think they place a boycott. They say, we don't sell to Jews. And God says, really? You don't sell to Jews? I hereby decree no Jew may marry an Ammonite or a Moabite. We don't accept gerim from Ammonites and Moabites. They placed the boycott on the Jewish people. What did the Jewish people harm them? They should have come out and said, here, we'll sell you our wares. You're traveling through the desert. You poor nomadic people. You have here 2 million people traveling through a desert. Instead of thinking how to help them, you're interested in boycotting them. You should have thought, how can we sell them our food and drink and at least help them remain alive? No, you boycott them. You boycott them, God says, we don't accept the gerim from Ammon and Moab. They cannot marry into the Jewish people. They want to become gerim, they could. But we won't accept their marriage into the Jewish people. Let's follow what we've seen until now. Let's just recap. The world's created, destroyed with a flood. Noah comes out and errs with wine. 10 generations later, Avram is a beacon of light, kindness. Avram shows kindness to his nephew Lot. Lot repays that kindness pretty badly by leaving, and Avram still protects him when he is captured by the four kings. Lot goes to do things that are immoral, but maintains the string of kindness. Even there, he is willing to risk his life to be kind. And his daughters are also continuing in a way that on the surface isn't bad. They want to save the world. And so, they don't do this more than once. Once is all it takes for them to become pregnant, because they're righteous people, these two daughters. And they have Ammon and Moab. But their offsprings come out rotten. Their offsprings will not sell food or drink to the Jewish people. They boycott the Jewish people, and God decrees they cannot marry into the Jewish people. And with that background, let's begin our book. We're learning Megillas Rus. And Megillas Rus begins by Yehi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim. It was in the time that judges judged, and judges were judged. A judge would tell a person, you know, there's something improper in the way you're behaving, and the person would say, oh, you're talking to me about something small, I'll tell you something big that you're doing improper. Torki sami ben shinecha, the shofet would say, you know, you have a little twig between your teeth, something minor to correct. And the person would tell the judge, torkora mi ben einecha, take the beam out from between your eyes. You got something huge to correct, don't you tell me what I should be doing differently. So the nation was corrupt. The nation had sinned by Hirat Baritz, and there was a famine in the land. People moved down morally, so the Torah tells us what's going to ensue. So there's a famine in the land. Notice the book does not identify when during the period of judges. We have a few hundred years when the judges led the Jewish people. It doesn't say when, which judge. It says there was famine in the land. Which land? Oh, the land of Israel. Did you notice? Eretz Israel is called Haaretz, the land. And all the other lands of the world are called Chutzlaretz, external to the land. They're just like the other lands. In Hebrew, the word other has negative connotations. Acher, he learned about. He's the other one. The other animal is the pig. Chazir is called Acher. When a person has something other, he has tzaraas. Davar acher. The word acher in Hebrew, other, means negative. Sometimes more negative, sometimes less. Remind me after class, off the record, I'll tell you two other things that are called acher. So, certain things can't be recorded. Time of Lemech, trying to get people to recognize that their ways were unruly. The third was in the time of Avram, the fourth in the time of Yitzhak, the fifth in the time of Yaakov, and this is the sixth famine in the time of Boaz. We're up to the sixth famine in world history. So, I think so. So that's a fair question for a Thursday night. We have to discuss that. What does this medrash mean? So, in the period of the judges, there was a famine in the land. So people are hungry. Vayelech ish. A man went. Mi Beit Lechem Yehuda. From Beis Lechem Yehuda. Is this identifying who this person is? Or is this identifying where he went from? Lagur b'shdei Moab. To live. He's going lagur. He's not going to settle there. He's going on visiting Chutzlarts for a few years. You know, a lot of people go to visit Chutzlarts for a few years and then comes a few more years. He's visiting Chutzlarts. Hu v'ishto shnei banav. Him and his wife and his two sons. V'shem ha'ish, in the name of the man, Elimelech, was, to me, is the kingdom. Oh yeah, that's his name? Elimelech, to me, is the kingdom? Yeah, that was his name. He was the next in line to be king. When is this story taking place? It is unclear whether it is taking place at the very end of the period of the judges, when the Jewish people were already talking, we need a king. And Elimelech was right. People were thinking, yeah, Elitav Amlucha, the Medrash says, Elimelech could have been the next king. Or is this taking place the way is more conventionally understood during the period of Boaz, which is a while before the end of the period of the judges, before we have a king. And his wife's name is Naomi, and his two sons are Mahlon and Chilion. They are Ephratim, which will have to be defined, from Beis Lechem Yehuda. Well, we just said they're from Beis Lechem Yehuda.
She
be. I don't know. It could be there's medrash that way. The psukim, I don't think, say that. So, yeah. So we find more than once that people in Tanakh had more than one name. We find Moshe Rabbeinu had many names. Why he was named both? I don't know what either name means. Boaz, I don't know what it means. And Ivtan, I don't know what it means. But if I remember correctly, someone does discuss it. We have to look it up in the Gemara. If I'm not mistaken, it's in Megillah. I have to check. So the Megillah begins by telling us it was in the days the judges judged, there was a famine. That seems to be the introductory point. How much relevance is this famine going to have? We're going to focus on being in Chutzarts, coming back when the famine's over. But that's how we're introduced to the Megillah. And a man went, and by the fact that he's identified as an Ish, we know he's an important person. And he went to live in the fields of Moab. We have a tradition that he was a very wealthy person. He was Parnas Hador. He was the one who was supposed to sustain the generation. And he was tired of people knocking on his door and asking him for donations. So he left the Chutz La'aretz. There they don't knock on the door. You know, in Israel there's a common saying, Chutz La'aretz lo yakum. Chutz La'aretz, this wouldn't happen. So, usually people say it negatively. Someone wrote a book about positive stories, about how Jews care for one another, and he called it, in Chutz La'aretz, this wouldn't happen. Chutz La'aretz lo yakum. But people all too often feel like, enough. Things are too buddy-buddy here. What's Boaz doing here? What's Elimelech doing here? He's going the exact opposite route that a leader should go. And he's going to a nation that knows how to deprive people of what they need. He's not just leaving the Jewish people. He's going to the Moabites. The Jewish people are defined as people who do chesed. They help one another. And Elimelech goes to Moab when Elimelech chooses to hold his assets. It's my money. No, in Judaism we don't view it that way. You were given the responsibility of that money. And so when Elimelech leaves the Chutzarts, he takes his wife and his two sons. Notice two things. She doesn't seem to have an identity. She is Ishto, his wife. And they don't even have separate identities. They are his two sons. And even when they are identified, so she is identified as his wife, Naomi, and his sons are not identified individually, but rather his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. So we have Elimelech. He has a wife whose name is Pleasant, Naomi. And his two sons are named Mahlon and Chilion. Need to be defined. Chilion seems to mean utter destruction. What does Mahlon mean? So the man's name is Elimelech, and his two sons, and they are Ephratim, they are important people. And you know what happens if things get rough and important people leave? So everyone says, wait a second, if he's leaving, he doesn't believe in it. You know, that's what I think it was first. When it was Rothschild. During the Spanish-American War, he had messengers out there telling him what was going on. And the messengers, he was able to get word back sooner than anyone else would. And everyone would look at what he did. So when he heard the Americans were winning, so he immediately sold stock, and everyone else sold stock. And the stock market plummeted. And then he bought the stocks at a much cheaper price, and then word got back that the Americans had won. And then the stocks shot up. Made a mint. I think it was the Spanish-American War. I think so. For some reason, that's what I have in mind. Maybe not. So, when people look at a leader, they say his actions indicate to us what he thinks is going to happen. And when there's a famine, And the leader who has money says, I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm going to Moab. So everyone's spirits crash. He, his important sons, his pleasant wife, everyone's spirits crashed. So he left. Not only did their source of support leave, but he gave a message, I don't believe we're making it so fast. Elimelech dies. Elimelech left the chutzarts. We have a tradition that when he died, he first lost his well. And when God punishes a person, God always starts externally. The well, the assets outside, till finally the home, the clothing, till finally the person himself. And that's what happened to Elimelech. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And from here we derive, Eina ish met ela liishto. When a man dies, his children, they can continue. Yeah, it's true, you only have one dad and one mom, but a person can continue. His parents, yeah, it's true, every child is special, but they can continue. But the spouse, no. The spouse, well, there's one spouse. And when a spouse dies, he dies primarily for his spouse. And when a woman dies, she dies primarily to her husband. They are the ones that suffer the most. And we derive it from this verse, Ve'amot elimelech ish Naomi, the husband of Naomi passed away. He had an identity. He wasn't just the husband of Naomi. But when he passed away, it was she who felt it most. And therefore, the death was of the husband of Naomi. And she remained with her two sons. And they married Moabite women. Notice, in their father's lifetime, they didn't do it. And one was named Orpah, and the other one's named Ruth. Orpah is also going to be known as Harapha. She's going to have many children. She's going to marry into the Philistine people, the Plishtim. The night she leaves, after accompanying her mother-in-law, and her mother-in-law tells her, no, go back, on that night, she goes back and goes with 100 men. She goes to a life of corruption, adulteress, and adultery. And the other one's name is Rus. Gematria 606. She needs 7 to get to 613. She's got the 7 mitzvahs and they know she's going to add the 606 to her life. Notice there are two opinions as to whether the 7 mitzvahs and they know are a part of Taryag or not. Some say that the Rambam says that there are 613 plus 7 that are really Gematria Keter mitzvahs. There are 613 plus 7. Gematria Keter, Gematria Ashira. Az Yashir Moshe es Hashira. This song, Hashira, is Gematria 620. Others are of the opinion that there are 613 plus, of which 7 are the 7 Noahide laws. And Rus, Gematria 606, because those are the number of mitzvahs she added to her life. Notice that Orpah is the first, and Rus is the second. The pasuk gives us an ordering, which usually is an ordering of potential, of importance, which seems to indicate that Rus had amazing potential. She was the first. And they were there for 10 years and had no children. 10 years without kids. Rus has no kids, and Orpah has no kids, and their husbands don't get the message. So they too die, Machlon and Chilion, in Chutz Loretz. Now, the woman remains alone, without her children, without her husband, and utterly impoverished. She can't afford shoes for her feet. Halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Every person should own shoes. You can't afford other garments, but shoes you should wear. She can't afford shoes. And so, she takes her two daughter-in-laws. Batakomi b'chalotah. She arises. And this can be understood simply. She arose to leave the fields of Moab. Or it can be understood spiritually. She was down in the dumps. Her sons married non-Jewish women. And now she arose. She said, okay, enough. We left the land of Israel. We left our people. We've sinned. We've had over 10 years of sinning here in Chutz Lartz. Enough. Now I have to arise. Sometimes a person has to say enough is enough. And she arose. And this is going to be the turning point in her life. Her arising and returning from the fields of Moab. A Malach came to her and told her, you know, God has redeemed His people. There's food in the land of Israel. Why was there food? Because of the merits of Ivtzon, the leader, and the prayer that Boaz prayed. So says the Medrash. Notice, the Medrash attributes the ending of the famine to Boaz's prayer. Often we stand in prayer and we say, I can pray for me. I can pray for you. But the Jewish people, that's a little bit big. the state of Israel, the state of Iran, the Jews in Iran, the soldiers that are captured, that's big. And Chazal teaches time and again, nothing's too big. And no man is too small. Every one of us has the potential to pray. Every one of us has the obligation to pray. So the Medrash attributes the ending of the famine to Boaz's prayer. So she returns. Now her daughter-in-laws, they are both daughters of kings. They were accustomed to living on a very high level. They were accustomed to a high lifestyle. And they married two young princes, two young Jewish princes, Machlon and Chilion. Now they're impoverished. She left the place that she was there. Well, I understand if you're going somewhere else, you sort of leave the place you were. That seems redundant. So our sages stress that this is to teach us that when a tzaddik leaves a place, it makes an impact. When a tzaddik is there, so the tzaddik gives a certain aura to a place. Panaziva panahadara. The tzaddik is the glory of a city when he's living in the city, and when he leaves, so then the glory leaves. So she leaves, and her two daughter-in-laws with her. Notice again how the Pesukim are describing it. She's the active one, and they are coming along. They went on the path, Lashuv el Eretz Yehuda, to return to the land of Yehuda. Now this needs definition. We said they were going. We said that they left. And now they are going on the path. When we speak about a path, we have to ask ourselves, is it physical? Is it spiritual? Are they returning to the land of Judah or the land of Israel? Why is it called the land of Judah? Is Eretz Yehuda a reference to the owners of the land, to the fact that she was from the tribe of Yehuda? Or is Eretz Yehuda a reference to the name Yud Kei Vav Kei? Where are they headed back to? Are they headed back to the land of the tribe of Yehuda? Yeah, that's what the Pasuk is stressing. Or are they headed back to the land of the belief in Hashem? Vatomer Naomi Lishtei Chaloteha. So now that they're en route, Naomi tells her two daughter-in-laws, again, just as the two sons were united in reference, we refer to them as the two sons, we refer to the two daughter-in-laws as the two daughter-in-laws. And she tells them, Lechna, go, Shovna, return. Why the double terminology? Go, return. What are we discussing here? Are we discussing just the physical going? Or are we also discussing spiritually? You want to advance with me to Judaism? No, go return spiritually. Isha lebet ima, each woman to her mother's home. What about her father's home? Or is it, as we often find, that ima refers to uma, to her nation? Yaz Hashem imachem chesed. May Hashem do chesed, kindness. Chesed is a special name of God. Kasher asitem ima medim veimadi, as you have done with the dead, that you buried them, there was no one around to bury them. They were impoverished and they had nothing. May Hashem do kindness to you as you have done with the dead, that you would not marry anyone else after their death, and with me, that you fed me, you sustained me. So Rus and Orpah had sustained Naomi, and Naomi is telling them, may God do kindness to you like you did to me, but go back. Why is she telling them go back? How is she going to live? They were a source of sustenance. Because the halacha says that when a non-Jew wants to come become a Jew, the first thing we tell him is, go back. What you coming for? And this isn't a game. We explained it. You know how tough it is to be a Jew? You know how difficult it is? You know how dangerous it is? And we derive it from here. You derive that halacha from here. Naomi tells them, go back. Yiten Hashem lachem. May Hashem give you complete payment for what you've done, for the kindness that you've done. And with that payment, may you each one find a husband and have a good marriage. And she kisses them, and they raise their voice, and they cry. And again, the two daughter-in-laws respond in unison, no, we're not returning to our nations, and we are not returning to our faiths. We are going with you to your nation, and we want to become Jewish. At this stage, Rus and Orpah are of the same opinion. We both want to become Jewish. And Naomi tells them, my daughters. Have we seen before that you refer to them as your daughters? No. We saw that the verse stresses their daughter-in-laws. Now they say we want to join the religion. And now she's telling them, my daughters, return. Why should you come with me? You think I have the possibility to bear any more children and they'll be your husbands? Return, my daughters, for I have I'm past menopause. I can't have children anymore. Even if I said, even tonight, let's say I was young and I could get married tonight, what, are you going to wait till they grow up to be your husbands? You're going to wait around? Seems like it was the custom then that if a husband passes away without children, then the brother would marry him. And it seems like this was a known custom. Either they had learned about it from their Judaism classes, like they wanted to become gerim, I guess they knew something about Judaism, or else it was a custom among the Moabites as well. So that's why she's telling them, what are you waiting for the brothers for? I can't have children, even if I could, what are you going to wait? Even if tonight I were married and got pregnant, what are you going to do? Wait until those kids grow up enough to marry you? And this is where we'll pick up, Bezat Hashem, on Sunday.